Okay, today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you Me'eretz HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Chet, and we got up to Tana Rabbanan, which is six lines down from the top. So, Tana Rabbanan, let's analyze now the issues we were talking about, the relationship of Amoni velo Amonit versus the idea of the Mitzri, and the Machlokas that we had in the Mishnah, whether we can make a kal v'chomer, the way Rabbi Shimon insists, or is there a halacha that the idea of nekevot is true kol sheket by a mitzri, that a mitzrit is not asura, and the entire discussion. Now I'd like to take a look at how we determine how to look at the children of these particular unions. Because, I mean, look, you could think of situations where you have one halacha about the father and one halacha about the mother. And we were talking about this yesterday with the diuk of Bitula Me'amav, that even if there are two amim. So what do we do when we have these mixtures? And how would we determine who we go according to? And when we say dor shlishi, when does the first dor begin? Is the ger himself, is he the first dor? What if, in fact, it's a woman who is pregnant, and she is the dor rishon? What's the din of the fetus in the pregnancy? Is the fetus a dor sheni? And so on and so forth. All of these issues, we have to look into the relationship of basically three different areas. One is where the Torah mentions ad dor asiri, which is a mamzer. Then we have the relationship of the amoni, where over there it says the ad dor asiri ad olam, which doesn't say by mamz, that lashon of ad olam. So obviously the dor asiri is ad olam when it comes to, is it true about the mamzer? When it comes to amon, I understand, but what about for the mamzer? And we'll see that we already talked about the way that we learn out gzeira shava, actually, one from the other. And then we've got the question of the Mitzri. So one part about the Mitzri was the Machlokas in the Mishnah, whether Mitzri is like Amoni in the sense of Mitzri velo Mitzrit, according to Rabbi Shimon, and not according to the Tanakama, which is, we paskel like the Tanakama, and Mitzri or Mitzrit are both Asura, Shalosh Dorot. And now we don't have any mimer over there about Dor Asiri, obviously, because there the halacha is Dor Shlishi. So dor shlishi, that's banim asher yivaldu lehem, dor shlishi, yavo lehem b'kal Hashem. Now, this braita wants to take a look at that pasuk in more detail. Because note that it mentions a couple of very interesting things over there. First of all, it stresses two times, lahem. So it says, banim asher yivaldu lahem, dor shlishi, yavo lahem b'kal Hashem. What is all of that? And the other issue is, Banim asher yivaldu is listed separately from dor shlishi. I mean, how do you get a dor shlishi if they're not banim? And how do you get banim if they're not a dor? I mean, so, like, why are we mentioning two different things? And why are we saying the lahem twice? So these are what we're going to look at now. So, Tana Rabbanan. Im ne'emar banim. So that's our question. The Torah mentions banim asher yivaldu lahem. So why mention dorot? Banim are dorot. V'im ne'emar dorot, loma ne'emar banim. So how do we get, like, both of these things where there's certainly no need for both of them? Ah, says the Gemara, but there is, you see. Because im ne'emar banim, v'lo ne'emar dorot. So let's say what I've just said, sons that are born to them. So I would have said that the issue over there of sons that are born to them is that the first son and the second son of any individual Mitzri, that's the point. In other words, a Mitzri is Megayer. His first son cannot marry into Yisrael. His second son cannot marry into Yisrael, but his third son can marry into Yisrael. Because that's how I would understand it, that it's just a question of his children, not of separate Doros, not that children. Child's child, child, that's not what we're talking about. And therefore, I need to know that it goes according to Dorot. Dorot, on the other hand, let's say it would have, all right, so just say Dorot, right? Dor Shlishi. No. Because let's say it would have said Dorot, I might have thought that it's talking to the Bnei Yisrael. You people are standing here at Kabbalah Satorah and who just got out of Mitzrayim. The first generation who got out of Mitzrayim, they can't marry Mitzrayim. Second generation, they can't marry Mitzrayim. But from the third generation after Kabbalah Satorah onwards, there, any Jew from that point on is allowed to marry Mitzri, because we only ushered Mitzri for 3 dairies. That's what I would have thought, Dor Shlishi, of you guys. Therefore, it had to say the Banim, the Kachnemra Banim, that we're talking about the children of the Mitzri. We're not talking about your Dorot. Okay, then let's talk about the two Lahems that are mentioned. What is that point? So the Lahem, where we first start talking about, the Banim Asher Yivaldu Lahem, that means Mehem, Mene, count from then. Because if it wouldn't have said that, I would have said, okay, the first generation is the children of the Ger himself, of the Mitzri. First generation child, first generation. Grandchild, second generation. Great-grandchild, third generation, is allowed to come in. Therefore, comes along the Torah to say, no. Start counting from them. The grandson is the third generation. So first generation is the Ger himself. Child is second generation. And third generation is the grandchild. That was the story of Minyomin, remember? The Chavrusa. Minyomin was Ger Mitzri. So that's what he said. I'm going to marry, and then my son's child will be able to marry into Yisrael. That's what I learned from this pasuk. What about the second lahem that it says in the pasuk? So yavol lahem, what's that? Yavol lahem, that comes to tell me halech achar psulam. So let's imagine a case like this, where you have a Mitzri or a Domi marrying a woman who's a Yisrael, or vice versa. So what do we do in that case? Do we follow the woman or do we follow the man? What it says is we follow whoever is pasul. So in other words, we follow them until the third generation, and at that point, they become regular B'nai Yisrael. But otherwise, if there's a psul on either end, there will be this psul. But it says Asher Yivaldu. So why do we need both of those? Because Itzich Hamichtav Lahem, which means that we start counting from the Ger himself, that first Lahem, but we also need to write Asher Yivaldu, because, I mean, Lechora, Dor Shlishi, the Banim Asher Yivaldu Lahem, Dor Shlishi, seems to imply that it goes only according to the children. That we need 3 generations of children. Isn't that a contradiction? First you say, count from him, his grandchild is mutter, and then you say, count from the birth. I mean, which one is true? That's the point. Because, look, each one of them is a different limud. Let's say the Torah would have said, this is a very strange way of saying it, as Rashi points out, because normally it's mashma that the two things are teaching you the same thing. So why do I need both? Whereas over here, actually, they're teaching you opposite things. Because Asher Yivaldu implies go after the Leda, and Lahem implies go after the Gerut, right? Okay, but we're using this format, because once you understand that they're 2 different Limudim, then obviously they're not contradictions, since they're talking about different topics. Okay, so therefore, Ikas Rachman Asher Yivaldu. So then I would have thought that we start counting from Asher Yivaldu, a child is the first generation. But the Ger himself doesn't count as a generation. That's why the Torah has to make it clear that no, Katavach Manolahem, we start from the Ger Mitzri himself. Now, let's say it would have said, Katavach Manolahem, so then I would say, okay, but what happens in a case where a pregnant Mitzrit becomes a Gioret? Now what? Well, we count from her, right? So, in that case, I would have said that that's 1 generation. She and her unborn fetus, that's 1 generation. Comes along the Torah and says, no. The moment that fetus is born, Asher Yivaldu, that's already the 2nd generation, which is a big chiddush. So even though this child was already extant as a fetus at the time of the Giyur, the moment that he's born, he's considered to be a generation to himself, and he's a Mitzri Sheni, and the mother is a Mitzrit Rishona. Now, what is also interesting is that we have an equivalent language by a mamzer, because by a mamzer, it also says, Gam dor asiri lo yavo lo. What do you mean lo yavo lo? So what does the lo teach me about the mamzer, which is equivalent to the lahem teaching me here about the Mitzri? Because I need the Torah to write lahem here in context of a Mitzri to tell me if one of either mother or father is a Mitzri and the other one is a Yisrael, that we always go according to the pogrom. And therefore, it's always going to be that door of the Mitzri. But here, when it says lo legabe mamzer, then we need to know what the halacha was over there, that it always goes according to the mamzer. And I'll tell you why we need both. Because ikat rachman ahacha, let's say we would only know that we always go according to the worst situation, mother or father, Mitzri, I would have said yes. But that's because basically the sperm that brings forth that is a tipa psula. That is, in its essence, it doesn't have the history, the genetic history. So that DNA is pasul because it doesn't come from the whole story of the development of Yisrael. Okay, so over there the Torah is makbid that we should consider either one of them sufficient to pasul the child. Mashenke and a mamzer, the DNA itself is kosher. So the mamzer is bami tipak sheretz. This particular toss of the die, that's a problem. But as far as the history of this DNA, maybe the Torah is saying, okay, so since be'etzem, it's coming from a mocker of kashrus, so therefore, emalo, maybe we shouldn't say that if one of them is possible, we're always going to possible the child. Maybe not. Therefore, we had to know by a mamzer yovo lo. We're only always going to look at the mamzer. Whoever it is, mother, father, the mamzer is it. And we know that that's true, remember, both Zohar and Nekeva, because of, as Rabbi Barnea pointed out yesterday, which I skipped, but thankfully he filled us in, that I skipped the piece that says mamzer comes from the word mumzar. Right? So this moon, there's some kind of alienation here in this combination. And that teaches us it doesn't matter whether it's an X chromosome or a Y chromosome. It's a mumzar. So therefore it includes both males and females, as the Gemara said yesterday. So I would have thought maybe not. Therefore, on the other hand, let's say it would have said a mamzer is low. Will always go according to the psul, I would say. But that's because a mamzer is ad olam, is never allowed to be Babi Kahal. So we're machmer on the mamzer. That I know, even though it doesn't say really ad olam by mamzer, but it does say ad olam by the Amoni. And I learn out the Dor Asiri from Amoni, as I mentioned earlier. So I would say, okay, so a mamzer is never Roy Blavo Bakal. But over here we say Dor Shlishi is kosher. So maybe by the same token, we shouldn't be so machmir to say either male or female can carry the problem of the relationship to Amoni. Therefore, we need to know both of them. Omer Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. So now, if a second generation marries a first generation, so the halacha over there is that nonetheless, the child is a third generation. So now, because you would have thought the opposite, right? You see clearly from what Rabbi Yochanan is saying that Alma Kasavar Batar Didesha Dinale. He says, no, you thought before that we said that we go always according to the worst situation, right? That is only where one or other of the parents is Jewish. Yes, then it's true. If any of the parents are Mitzri, then it will be defined by the Mitzri. But how about where one Mitzri marries another Mitzri? So you have a Mitzri and a Mitzrit. Over there, the halacha is that if one is a Mitzri Rishon, one is a Mitzri Sheni, these are Gerim, obviously. They're already in the second generation of that process. Or in the first generation. So then the halacha is we always go according to the father, because that's l'mishpechotam, l'veit avotam, when it comes to Yisrael. And here we're talking about after they were Megayer. So in that case, we will follow the normal halacha, l'mishpechotam, l'veit avotam. Motiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, how does that work out? It says in the Mishnah that Rabbi Tarfon Omer, this is the famous story of, in the Mishnah Kiddushin, where Rabbi Tarfon says, you can actually work things out that a mamzer is able to get his children back into Klal Yisrael. How do you do that? Well, it's very simple, you see. If a mamzer goes ahead and he marries a shivcha, now obviously you're normally not allowed to marry a shivcha. However, what we say, as Tosis points out, there is a difference in a case where he bought a shivcha in order to be able to be matayer the children. So over there, there's no inyan that he's interested in keeping a shivcha. He's not interested in keeping a shivcha. He's basically interested only in being able to have a way to impregnate someone so that he can have a child that is a usable child for Klal Yisrael. He doesn't want to spend his life reproducing in a way that's just going to be marbam amzerim in Yisrael. So therefore, what does he do? He buys a shivcha, impregnates the shivcha, has a child, and then he goes ahead and he frees him. So that would mean that she, in this case, the halacha would be that it should be okay, right? Because gufa, the child at that point, is as if he came from nowhere. He doesn't carry the idea of the mamzer with him because he is the son of a shivcha. So the Mishnah is saying beferish that after he frees this child and now he becomes Jewish, he is not considered to be a mamzer. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, I thought Rabbi Yochanan said that you go according to the father, Mishpachotam Levet Avotam. Didn't you say that? Oh, but obviously that's different, says the Gemara. We already know this, that we have a gzirat ha-katuv. Remember, we learned out before, Ha'isha v'yiladeha t'yela adoneha. Now, if you're going to tell me that the Adain owns the woman, what does that mean? And the children, I understand he owns the woman because she's a shivcha. She's a shivcha k'nanit. How in the world could he own the children? Oh, so gufa, the Torah is coming to be mechadish to you, that there is no yichus over here to Yisrael, and therefore this child is not mityaches to the father in this particular case where it deals with the case of the shivcha. Yashani hatam, that's unique. It had nothing to do with the psak of Rabbi Yochanan, the mishpachotam leveit avotam, because there are no mishpachotam leveit avotam in a case where the Torah's goof is saying, no, this is basically property. Masiv Rava. Okay, Rava, but I have a problem with Rabbi Yochanan's psak that we go according to the father from a braita. Rabbi Yehuda, this is the braita we had earlier, remember, about Minyumin. So there was this guy, my chavrusa, says, as we'll see, Rabbi Yehuda, says, my chavrusa, Minyamin. So he was my chavrusa. We were both talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. And he used to say, listen, I'm a first generation Mitzri. So I became Jewish. And I am going to marry my son to a second generation Mitzrit, and that way my grandson is going to marry a nice Jewish girl from the Rebbe's family. Here, take a look. Our Rebbe is very tolerant, and he was ready to accept Minyumin's grandson into his mishpacha and to turn him into a Rebbe himself. So you see that in order for this to happen, Minyumin felt that he had to marry his son to a Mitzri Sheni, because if not, so then it would be, and this is the whole way it works out. But if you're telling me that we're going to always go according to the male, that's what Rabbi Yochanan said, so then his son is by definition a second generation, or the way we just learned, we start counting from daddy, right? So daddy was number one, that's Minyamin. His child is number two, that's the Mitzri Sheni. Then we go ahead and we say, I don't care who he marries. He could marry anyone. And his child will always go according Mishpachotam LeBeit Avotam, according to Rabbi Yochanan. So why did Binyamin make such a big deal? Oh, I'll make sure that my son marries a Mitzri Sheni. It's irrelevant who he marries, right? So he said, Asila b'ni mitzri she'nit k'dei she'yehe ben b'ni ro'i lavo b'kahal. Yisak, adaitach v'atrei didei shadina, like you, Rabbi Yochanan, say that it always goes according to daddy. So even if his son would marry a first-generation mitzrit, right? What would the din be of their child? He would be a mitzri shlishi, because you're saying we go according to the mishpachotam. Here we have a braita against Rabbi Yochanan. It says the Gemara, yeah, but you forget that when this braita was said in front of Rabbi Yochanan by the Tana who would say over the braita, Rabbi Yochanan said to him, change that. Today, what you should say is, I can take for my son even a mitzrit rishona, not asila b'ni mitzrit shnia, because that's a mistake in your girsa. It means even a mitzrit rishona. It will, by definition, give me a mitzrit shlishit. Now, this is one way that we heard what Rabbi Yochanan said, but Rav Dimi, when he came from Eretz Yisrael, he said, I'll tell you what Rabbi Yochanan said. Here's the correct lashon. A mitzri sheni, shenasa mitzrit rishona, b'na sheni avi. Oh my gosh, exact opposite. Even if he's a second generationer, if he marries a first generationer woman, then the child is going to go according to a woman. And the child is going to be a sheni, not a shlishi. Exact opposite of what we said over here. Alma batar imesha dina lei. So here, actually, what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that we always go according to the mother. So, in other words, what we say over here is, apparently, this is how the Gemara is going to assume, the logic is over here, that apparently, it's because uber yerech imo. So since, basically, a fetus is an extension of the mother, this is a big machlokas lagabe, many sugyas, as we'll see in a moment. How do we view a fetus? Do we view a fetus as being a separate entity? Or do we view a fetus as being an extension of the mother? So if we would assume that it's simply an extension of a mother, so now that it's born, it's going to be going according to its mother. So that is this level we're going to change later, but this is how we understand things. So therefore, the problem would be that if the way Rav Dimi is claiming, Rav Yochanan said we go according to the mother, then that would mean that he holds ubar yerechimo, that a fetus is considered to be a part of the mother. And therefore, Abaye asked Rav Dimi, your version in Rav Yochanan cannot be right, because Rav Yochanan himself paskin, that in the event that somebody set aside a pregnant korban chatas, so he takes a female animal, beautiful female animal, for his korban chatas, and that animal was pregnant. Then the animal gives birth. What's the halacha? Actually, the guy who wants to bring the chatas and who set aside the chatas initially can choose either mother or child. Whichever one seems to be a nicer carbon, he can bring either one. Ratza mitchaper ba, ratza mitchaper bivlada. And then what happens to the other one? The other one is simply we wait until it gets a mum, and then we're paid it. Why is that? Because even though, remember, there's a halacha of chamesh chataot hametot. Chamesh chataot metot, one of them is a vlad chatat. But a vlad chatat is talking about where first we had a chatas, and then the chatas conceived and gave birth. That's a vlad chatat, and that indeed is halacha l'mashmit Sinai. It's one of the five chatot habeitot. But in this case, the fetus itself was made hegdash at the same time that the mother was made hegdash. So therefore, we view it as he set aside two karbanot, which is often done. One is set aside as achrayut. In case something happens to the other one, I'll take this one. So I want to have available a choice. So over here, since, look at this, right in front of my eyes. So I want a choice. Either I will take the child or I will take the mother. Fine, it's okay. That's like normally taking two animals and you'll decide which one you want, right? So there, of course, that's not considered to be a Vlad Chattas Lamisa. Furthermore, even after I choose which one I want, the other one is not a Chattas HaMesa, even after I bring the one that I chose. You'll say, what do you mean? But one of the five Chataot HaMetot is the fact that you were mitchaper with another one. And if you said, the Baal of the Chattas was mitchaper ba'akar, then the original one has to die. True, but that's not in a case where it was originally set aside for achrayut. That's talking about a case where you lost the Chattas, you went ahead and bought another one and were mitchaper, and then you found the original one. That's called a Chattas that was nitchaper ba'al ba'acher. Yes. Okay, so in this case, you got a great situation. You can choose either one, and the other one is not going to be included in the Chataot HaMetot. So, Ratza mitchaper ba, Ratza mitchaper bevlada. Now, okay, let me point out to you, you'll say, what in the world are you bringing in the dinim of Chatos HaMesos into our sugya? Has nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with it. Because you seem to be claiming that according to Rabbi Yochanan, we view the fetus as an extension of the mother, and therefore the halacha is that we should go according to the mother in determining the status of Rishon Vesheni, right? But Iyabit Bishlam Uber Lav Yerachima. See, the way we originally understood Rabbi Yochanan, we go according to daddy. That's because you hold that a fetus is not an extension of the mother. Then that would explain why, when you set aside a pregnant chatas, it was two separate chatot that you set aside. Not a mother that's pregnant. It was a mother and a child. So that would explain why it's achrayut. So then, havile kamar for shtei chatot leachrayut, and halacha is over there. As Rav Hoshaya explained, that Yifrish Techa Ta'ot La'achrayut, the din is that Mitchaper Bachat Me'am Vashniya Tir'eh. So you can use one, and then the other one, you're allowed to let it go around, wait until it gets a mum in the pasture, and then we're poda it. But, Iyamet Uber Yerech Imohu, the way you're claiming, Rav Dimi, is that according to Rabbi Yochanan, the fetus is an extension of mommy. But if that's the truth, so then this is a classic Vlad Chattas. A Vlad Chattas is one of the five Chataot HaMetot. And then how can you say, let the other one choose which one you want, let the other one get a mum? Nonsense. It's a Vlad Chattat is Labita Azil. Ooh, Rav Dimi, that shut Rav Dimi up. Ishtik. He didn't have a response to that one, because it sure seems like Rabbi Yochanan is inconsistent. Says Abaya, okay, I didn't mean to stump you, you know. I know the answer. Let me tell you the answer. The answer is not really such a big problem like I made it out to be. There's a difference. The difference is that Dilma Shani Hatam, in the case of the Mitzri, the reason that we go according to Mami is not because of Uber Yerech Imo, according to Rabbi Yochanan. It's because it specifies banima sher yivaldu. What's stressing yivaldu? Hakatuv tilao beleida. It's the Torah went out of its way to make it dependent on mommy. So even though Rabbi Yochanan normally, you're right, would hold that you uber is not yerachimo, as we could see from the chatas. But in this particular case, since it says asher yivaldu, therefore he says it has to go according to mommy. And Rav Dimi, so there's different ways of understanding this piece. We've had this before, actually. We've had this in Erevin, but there's different ways of understanding this, whether it's a put down or whether it's a put up. It's not very clear. So Rav Dimi says to Abaye, hey, Karkafna, Mr. Brain. Boy, you got a hell of a brain. Let me tell you, whew. But I don't believe you thought of this yourself. You know, I don't care how big your brain is. You must have been standing there. I saw you hiding out between the pillars of the Beis HaMedrash when Rabbi Yochanan said this. It's too smart to figure out on your own. Okay, so, I mean, the pashtus is that that's just a way of saying how brilliant you are. Hey, brain. Wow. It's as if you were standing there when this was said. But Rabbi Yochanan, but Tosfos learns that Actually, chazite l'reishach doesn't mean I saw your big brain standing there. It means I saw your master, meaning I saw your Rebbe standing there. And that's a reference to Rabba, who was actually had learned with Rabbi Yochanan. And so that's the way Tosfos understands it. And that you must have absorbed this from Rabba's teaching, who is your Rebbe, and now you think you figured it out yourself. You ain't as smart as you think you are. Okay. Anyway, but getting back to the issue. So now you're saying that the only reason is because Rabbi Yochanan says, look, since it says, Asher Yivaldu, then we are forced to go according to the mother's identity over here. But that would mean that in general, Rabbi Yochanan still maintains that we go according to the father's identity, right? How do you explain the fact that Rava says that if a pregnant woman becomes a giyoret, that then the halacha is that when her child is born, the child does not need a separate tefillah to become a ger? Why? Because the mother's tefillah helps for the child. Now, that doesn't make any sense. If a fetus is part of the mother, so then if fetus goes with mother, because they're all one body, into the mikveh, then fetus has already gone to the mikveh. And so the giyur is complete on the fetus, and he is born as a full-class Jew. But if if you're going to tell me that according to Rabbi Yochanan, he is not part of the mother, so then when he's born, since he already was extant before his mother was Jewish, so why doesn't he need tefillah? Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say he doesn't need tefillah because since he was inside mommy, and therefore you'll say, so how could being inside mommy help in a mikvah? Let's say I take this kid and put him in a plastic bag and then put him in a mikveh. Is that going to work? Of course not. That's a chatzitza. You can't have a chatzitza. But you'll tell me, yeah, but Rabbi Yitzchak said that really it's only midrabbanan. Because only if both issues, namely, number one, most of the item that you're being tevel is in the plastic bag, is covered with something, is painted, whatever it is, doesn't allow direct contact with the water. And there's also a makpida lav, meaning that whatever it is that's getting between you and the water is something that normally you would get rid of and wash off. So let's say you're covered with paint or something, right? So then, as we said, it depends. If you're a painter who goes around with your fingers painted half of the time anyway, you're not going to sit there scrubbing with turpentine every day. So then it's not going to be a problem because you're not makpid on it. But you need both issues, midiraisa. It has to cover most of you, and you also need to be makpid on it. Well, as far as we know, in all of the surveys that we've made of fetuses, there hasn't been one that we've found says, I don't like being in this womb. Get me out of here. So not one of them said that. So then apparently there's no problem of a womb getting in the way of a tefillah. So, okay, so he's in mommy. So big deal. Since according to Rabbi Yitzchak, he doesn't care about being in mommy, so then it should be a kosher tefillah, even if he's not part of mommy. Ah, but that doesn't work over here. I'll tell you why. Because Rav Kahana said, yes, that's true, but only if it's rubo. So if you've got 60% is in the plastic bag, but not if you've got 100% in the plastic bag. And in this case, mommy is plastic bag. And therefore, it's not going to work unless he's actually part of mommy. But kulo is chotzeitz, says the Gemara. My dear sir, mommy is not a plastic bag. That is entirely a male's way of looking at things. As far as fetus is concerned, mommy is my life. And therefore, in that case, obviously, since his Hainu Revite, this is the way that a fetus is meant to be, it doesn't matter, even if it's kulay. I mean, I understand that if it was really a plastic bag, and I don't care about being in a plastic bag over there, you can say, okay, but you're not in the mikveh at all. But over here, when you're in Mami, then you are indeed in the mikvah. Now, another thing that has to do with our sugya that Rabbi Yochanan is quoted about is that when Ravina came from Eretz Yisrael, he said that when it comes to determining what your nationality is, your nationality, if you're not Jewish, follows the male. Now, this is very important because let's say we have the din of the Shiva Amamim at the time of the Knesset El Eretz. Okay, so we are not allowed, unless, of course, it becomes a ger, but we are not allowed to keep any of the Shiva Amamim alive, right? So what defines this particular individual? His mother or his father? And even though Dror objects to murder, that's because he wasn't there among the Kev She'aretz at the time of Knesset La'aretz. So he would certainly have been Mekabel, whatever the halacha was. And because of that, we need to define how do we know who he is. So this, says Rabbi Yochanan, goes according to the male. But once these people have been Midgayer, then, Richie, we hear you drinking, Richie. You're a little bit too early. Oh, yes, indeedy.
He's getting ready.
Yeah, I know he's getting ready, but now he exposed how he gets ready, and he's again not sharing. You know, at least Gavi shows us his boost pills. You know, and he offers it, I think. So anyway, we should follow whichever is worse. Like, Gemara's going to discuss this. Let's say mommy and daddy are both problems. How do we decide which nation you came from? Then we go according to whoever's a bigger problem. So let's explain that. When you're talking about determining your nationality and you're not Jewish, so then he says, go according to the male always, right? Okay, that's the Braita. How do we know, and we just had this in the Parsha, how do we know that if somebody from one of the Goyim, let's say, you know, he's Roman, all right, little bit, obviously, a mix-up of some times, you know. But so let's say a Roman comes, and he goes into the land of Canaan, and he takes a woman from Canaan, and he has a son. Are you allowed to buy a Roman as a servant? Or do we say, well, his mother was a Canaanite, so you can't keep him around? So the halacha over there is that if he comes along and he takes a Canaanite, you are allowed to buy the child because the child is a Roman. And don't worry about anachronisms. And that would be a big problem. But anyway, here you've got a Roman walking around in Eretz Yisrael. You can buy him. Shinema v'gam ibnei atoshavim agarim imachem, mihem tiknu eved mama. So we said, you are allowed to buy a servant. We just had this in the Parsha. You're allowed to buy a servant from the children of the Toshavim. And that would mean that if you have a father that came from somewhere else, and now he's living here because he's an itinerant worker, you can buy his child, even though the woman that he impregnates is from the Shiva Amamim. Okay. You might think that the inverse is also true. You might think that maybe a Canaani goes and moves to Rome as an itinerant worker and has a child from one of these Roman women. You might think you could buy that child. No, it's asher holidu mi'artzechem. Normally, it's the woman. She's going to be in her place. So the ones who were born, meaning they were impregnated in your land, which means only children that came from the mother was a Canaanite, which means the father was an itinerant worker, but not from Hagarim Ba'artzechem, not from males who lived there. So here we're talking about that if they were born Lechatchila from people who live there, then it's telling me that it's usher. So generally, Rashi says, we look at this as we refer to the woman because woman a woman stays usually where she was born, and the men go around to be itinerant workers in various places. So in other words, if you have a mother who came back to meet her husband in Canaan because her husband, when he was working in Rome, had got her pregnant, now she's moving here, that you can't buy the child of. Okay, so that is the basis of Rabbi Yochanan. Now let's see that second thing that he said. If they become Jewish, you go according to the one who's got the bigger problem. Pagum shebinayim. Now, what's the case? Are we talking about, let's say, a male Egyptian marries a female Ammonite, right? And that means that we should go according to the Egyptian father, and the child is Osir, rather than going according to the nationality of the Ammonite, because an Ammonite is Muteret. No, because an Ammonite is not Peguma at all. An Ammonite is completely Kshera. So why would you say follow the bigger problem? There isn't any problem in one of them. It should have just said, follow the problem. So there, my pogum shibishneyamite, where is there a pogum? Ammoni is not a problem for an Ammonite. It says Ammoni velo Ammonite. That can't be the case. So the case must be this. An Ammoni, now the father is Ammoni, and he marries a Mitzrit. So now, it go according to whatever is worse. Ah, what's worse? Well, it depends what the child is. If the child is a male, so then what's worse for him is to be called an Ammoni, because an Ammoni is not kosher lavo b'kahal. If the child is a female, then don't call her an Ammoni. Go according to the mother and make her a Mitzrit. And therefore, you have to wait three generations for her grandchild to be kosher. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that everything is defined situationally dependent on the sex of the child. Thank you. And now it's time for our very special Kapitan, who, as we've seen, has been preparing for this for a number of months. And this is his big moment. Chaim. Wow. You can tell it's a Yahrzeit day. Mamzerim v'netinim asurim v'yisuram yisur olam. Now, we've been talking about the Mitzri situation. We're over there. It depends how many generations, dor sheni, dor shlishi. But when it comes to mamzerim, or even when it comes to the netinim, now remember, the netinim were really from the Chivi, and they were midgayer. We had before the whole discussion where Rava said, oh, I made a mistake. Must be that the Isser is Dioraisa on the Netinim, because it says Lotit Chateinbam, and if they're still not Jewish, how could you be Mitchateinbam anyway? We got into that whole discussion about Shlomo having casual sex with them, not actually marrying them. That whole business that we spoke about. Here, we're going, according to the Shita, as we'll see, that the Netinim became mutter after they became gerim, but we ushered them from ever marrying into Yisrael because of their behavior. So that is the mamzerim, of course, is midiraisa osirli olam, because we learned that out from Dor Asiri, learning out from Amon, and by Amon it says Dor Asiri ad olam. So we learn out if Dor Asiri over there is ad olam, Dor Asiri is here ad olam. So Reish Lakish comes out with an extraordinary psak halacha that a female mamzeret, now we use other words for female mamzerets, but anyway, but the Mishnah is using female mamzeret, okay? So a female mamzeret is actually 10 generations after the original mamzerut, she now becomes muteret to marry. Why? Because we only know the halacha that post 10 generations is usher, and that when it says the 10th generation, it doesn't mean 10 generation, it means ad olam. We only know that because we learned it from the din of Amoni Moavi. Because over there it says lo yavolam akal Hashem ad olam. So mala halam nikevot mutarot. If we're going to be learning it out of Amon and Moav, then we cannot learn out more than the din is by Amon and Moab. So if you know that the mitzri, that the mamzer is osir without Amon Umoav, ad dor asiri, that's all you know. But if you need to come on to the Gzera Shava from Amon Umoav, then you can't know more than you knew from Amon Umoav. What's the din by Amon Umoav? Only males are osir, females are mutter, right? So therefore, after 10th generation, now the halacha is that the females are mutter, because I can't go beyond what I learned out from Amon Umoav themselves. So just like over there, nekevot are mutarot, here also mamzer nekevot are mutarot. Says the Gemara, but I don't understand. If you're learning it from Amon Umoav, why don't you learn out the din from Amon Umoav? By Amon Umoav, the females are immediately mutter, because amoni v'lo amonit. So then if you're learning from Amon Umoav, then you should know the din is mamzer v'lo mamzerit, which we know isn't true because of mumzar. Mamzer equals bad genes. So there's some kind of pagam in this toss of the die. Okay. But why? Why not learn that a female mamzeret is muteret the same way an amonit is muteret? Well, because I only need the gzereshava from after the 10th generation, right? So once I have the gzereshava of 10th generation, then it's true. It doesn't apply to the females. But before I got to the 10th generation, I know the halacha directly from the din of mamzer itself, where it says Torah Siri. So zeu. But didn't our Mishnah just say that mamzerim and netinim are asurim, v'yisuram yisur olam, echad zecharim v'echad nekevot? Now what the heck is going on? What, Reish Lakish argues on the Mishnah? It says beferish in the Mishnah, whether it's a male or female, this is a permanent pagam, and there is no way that it will ever be mutter. So how does that work? Says the Gemara, lo kasha, ha kamandi omar, don mina umina, and ha kamandi omar, don mina v'uke be'atra. It depends, obviously, who you go according to. Now remember, we've had this thing many times. Don mina umina means when you have a base to something, so then you have to learn everything out of that thing. If you're learning from Amon Umoav, don mina, learn from it, umina, and apply all of the rules of the thing that you're learning from. So just like the thing that I'm learning from is only males, not females, here too, it's only males, not females, right? Masha Ein Kein, if you hold in the Mishnah, like the Mandi Omar, don mina v'uki ba'atra, the point is that wherever we have a limud, we only learn what the specific limud is, namely, that Dor Asiri actually translates into in perpetuity, not Ador Asiri. But now, taking that new word, okay, now we know forever. Okay, what's the din forever? Well, we don't take everything out of Amon Umoav, we now put it into context. That's Uki Ba'atra. Put it into the context into which you're importing it. So this is exactly the same when you're taking, basically, you're making a copy in a word process. So now the question is, when you paste, are you going to take on the paste of the, all of the attributes of the paragraph, or are you going to paste it as it is that you copied it? There's two pasting functions, right? So one pasting function is don mina umina, maintain the original formatting. The other pasting function is don mina but uki batra. So paste, but take on the formatting of the paragraph. Same thing is true over here. If I'm going to paste the meaning from Amon Umoav, which will be that there is Asara Doro translates into forever, fine. Okay, now, what's the formatting? So if you hold that it's the formatting from where I took it, then it's only going to be applying to males and not the females, because that's the din by Amon Umoav. But if I'm pasting it according to the dinim of Mamzerim, there's no difference between male mamzerim and female mamzerim, because mumzar says it's irrelevant what the sex is and which chromosome it's on. It's just important that it's zarut. That's all. So that explains the whole difference. Lo kasha. Ha kamandi omar don mina umina. Ha kamandi omar don mina v'uki be'atra. So they asked Rebbe Eliezer, What's the din of a mamzeret after 10 generations? He said to them, let me tell you something, buddy. I would pay you to bring me a mamzeret after 3 generations. There ain't no such animal, okay? Forget about 10 generations. So what is that supposed to mean? Alma Kassavra, apparently he holds Rabbi Eliezer, that a mamzer will not survive because otherwise he will get mixed up with other Jews and will create mamzerim, and every time he impregnates, somebody's dropping off another mamzer in the world. We can't have that. V'chein amar Rav Huna, mamzera lo chaye. What? The Mishnah says mamzerim asurim yisurim isur olam. They're always going to be usur. And you tell me, that's nonsense. There is no always. They're not going to survive? Omer Rabbi Zera Ladidima Farshali Minaidim Rabbi Yehuda. Listen, Rabbi Yehuda explained this to me. If a mamzer is known to be a mamzer, then he can live because nobody's going to marry into his family without being aware that the children will be pegumim and so on. But if he doesn't, nobody knows he's a mamzer, then he himself won't even live. If some people know and they have like that, but it's not generally known, yediyah v'lo yediyah, so then he can live for 3 generations, which is what Rabbi Eliezer says. You go ahead and bring me a 3 generation. But not more than that, because then by then it's forgotten since it's not absolutely clear that he's a mamzer. And there was a mamzer in the neighborhood of Rabbi Ami, and nobody knew he was a mamzer. And Rabbi Ami put it up on the internet and said, this guy is a mamzer. And actually it was Meir Sharim. They don't have internets, but they do have these big black signs. So-and-so is today's mamzer. They still do this still today. So because of this, the guy was very upset, and he was running around crying, look how Rabbi Ami treated me. Rabbi Ami said to him, what are you, crazy? You should say thank you to me. Nobody knew you were a mamzer, which meant you never would have survived long enough to even father children. You owe me your life, honey babes. Omer of Chana Bar Ada, Nitinim David Gazar. It was David HaMelech, he said, these Nitinim stink. I don't believe they should be in Klal Yisrael. It says, Vayikra HaMelech LeGivonim, Vayomer Aleim, the king calls the Givonim, and by the way, VaGivonim Lo Mibnei Yisrael Heima, these Givonim are not part of Yisrael, meaning they can't marry into Klal Yisrael. Why did he treat them like that? Dechtiv. That's because there was this terrible famine, right? 3 years, 1 year after the next, in the days of David HaMelech. He couldn't figure out, why do we deserve a famine? So the first year he said, okay, there must be people worshiping Avodah Zarah. Get the police out there. And that must be why this happened. Because it says, V'yatzaret ha-shamayim v'lo yamatar. So they sent police all over the country. They couldn't find anybody worshiping Avodah Zarah. The next year, there's still a famine. So he said, there must be people that are going to whorehouses. Ovri Avera Yesh Bechem. So people have gotten very relaxed about sex around here because it says that there's no, it says, Meitzach Isha Zona Hayalacha. You had the chutzpah of a zona, but they looked around and they did not find that this was a problem. The third year, he said, things must be a lot worse than that. There must be people making donations in shul, and everybody is clapping and at these big parties, and they don't pay up. Now, that's the biggest problem. It's hard to believe that people like that would exist in Klal Yisrael, but that's the only explanation, because it says, Nisim v'ruach, there's people with clouds and winds. I mean, they're blowing their big matzav, oh, $100 million. But Geshemayim, there's never any rain. That's the idea of Ish Mitalel B'matat Sheker, people who pretend to make donations, but they don't give it. They went around and Batku V'lo Matzu. They could not find people who did such horrible things either. So immediately it says, right after that, Vayevakesh David et Pnei Hashem. I need to find out what this is all about. Eina davar talui alabi. I've got to do the research myself. What does that mean? Amar Resh Lakish. It means he went to the Urim V'Tumim. That's what it means to say the Vayvakish Advar Hashem. Where do we see that Lashon? Amar Rabbi Elazar. The word Pnei, it says here Vayvakish David Pnei Hashem, and it says in the din of the Urim V'Tumim in Dvar in Bamidbar, it says V'Sha'al Lo B'Mishpat Ha'urim Lifnei Hashem. And Hashem answered, you know why this has happened? It's because of Shaul and the house full of blood who killed the Givonim. That's two different things. It's because Shaul didn't have a good hesped when he died, and it's because of the house of blood, which is Shaul's sin for murdering the Givonim. What? Since when did Shaul murder Givonim? No, but he murdered their Parnassa, because he killed the Kohanim and Novira Kohanim, and the Givonim were the ones who were bringing Mayim Umazon to Nov. That was the Gezer on them. They're supposed to be the water carriers and so on. And because of that, it says, if Shaul murdered them, you took away their Parnassa, and now they don't have any way to make... Wait, that doesn't make sense. I mean, you're saying two opposite things. Shaul didn't have a good hesped. That's why there's been a famine for 3 years. And in the same sentence, you say, that house of murderous blood, that no good Nick Shaul, make up your mind. Is he supposed to have a good hesped, or is he the house of Domim? That makes sense. Kotova al Shaul shalonispa ka'alocha. And at the same time, you're saying, Asher heimita givonim, and he's a Beit Damim? Absolutely. That's the whole point that people do not understand. It's all very nice to judge people. But if you're going to judge people, because you have no choice, judge them in context. And that's what the pasuk says. Bakshu et Hashem kol anvei oretz, Asher mishpato pa'alu. What's the meaning, mishpato pa'alu? The mokum of the mishpat, when the midas hadin is looking at a person, look at what he did wrong, that's where you have to be the most makbid about how amazing this person is. Okay, so he made this mistake, but you cannot go after someone and not mention the good things. Therefore, it says in the same pasuk, he wasn't nispar kalacha, and he killed the givonim.